Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're good?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Seeing Luke Moore's penis is not the way I want to start the show.
It's happened now, hasn't it?
Well, you should have said then.
It was pretty much most of it. I was expecting like a cheeky... No, it was all out.
Oh, dear. Not even that cold. Why is it like that? Oh, I fancy a chipolata now. We are going to have to start the show quickly. But before I do that, I'm going to introduce you to Pete.
Yeah, hello. I don't want to really be part of this week.
James or Jim.
All right.
Last but not limp, Lukey Moore.
All right. I don't know what you lot are talking about.
Fortunately, it is a podcast, not a vodcast. Chaps, last weekend, Rafa Benitez and big Sammy Allardyce were at it again. Feuding,
yeah.
That is.
Yeah.
And that is the inspiration for the opening question. What is your favourite feud between managers? Two managers, I would imagine. Unless you can think of a third party. James or Jim, I want you to go first for a change.
Well, I think my favourite one ever is when old Keggy Keegan just couldn't hack Alex Ferguson's mind games. Very simple mind games of just slightly criticising teams before they have a play. But before they have a play?
Have a good play today.
Before they have a game. And obviously, you know what I'm talking about, the whole, I will love it if we beat them sort of fiasco. And he just couldn't deal with the most sort of simple pressure at the top of the table of Ferguson just sort of exerting his mind games. It was brilliant to watch. I watch it every now and then just to remember quite how mental it was. You don't see that sort of breakdown anymore.
That was sort of less a feud, more that Ferguson just amusing himself.
Yeah.
Keegan just going absolutely mental. That, for the record, that is actually in my top three favourite moments ever in football. As well.
Really?
Oh, amazing stuff. Come on.
It's a slightly breaking voice.
He's out of order there.
Yeah. To see a man emotionally and psychologically unravel live on television. Come on.
I would love it.
Not Kevin Keegan.
No, fair enough. You like him, don't you?
We all like him.
Exactly.
He's a good man.
He's a good man, but he's hilarious as well.
Yeah. Luke, what have you got?
I think I've got a feeling from what he said earlier, I might have the same one as Pete.
Me and Luke. So to sort of battle this, we're both going to do an impression of one of the managers at exactly the same time.
Okay. I genuinely don't know what
after
you've
three.
One, two, three.
Now then, young man. Yeah, I knew it was the same.
Oh, cool. I was doing Jimmy Savile. Now then.
I was doing Don Revy.
That was Jingle Jangle.
Yeah, so I'm going to go Peters as well.
Yeah, we're going to go for Don Revy and
Brian Clough.
We're like a tag team today.
That was a monumental feud of epic proportions. That spilled out onto live telly. That sort of almost was one of the reasons behind Clough taking the Leeds job, almost arguably to completely destroy Revy's legacy. out of principle. And obviously it was made into a film, so it's a pretty far-reaching one.
Clough didn't know that Revy was going to be interviewed, because when Clough lost the job at Leeds, he went on TV, didn't he? Mm. And he didn't know Revy was going to be interviewed at the same time. Is that right?
Yeah, he probably got screwed over, didn't he? Yeah.
On the interview on the television.
Oh, no, yeah, they both
Clough didn't know that Revy was going to be sat next to him, because he kind of, well, in the film, and he kind of says to the presenter, go easy on me tonight.
Yeah.
He walks in and it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But at one point, there's a great bit, and this wasn't on the film, this is actually the real footage. They're chatting away, and it's the only time there's a slight bit of agreement between the two. And Revy says something, and Clough goes, right, good lad.
Yeah. But Clough come across really well, because he was very ahead of his time at sort of manipulating the media, Revy came across as a little bit stuffy and old-fashioned.
Yeah.
So it worked in Clough's favour, really, anyway.
That's right, yeah.
But that was a great feud. I mean, anyone who knows anything about footy from that sort of era will know that was unbelievable stuff. Because obviously Clough liked to play the game in the right way. And Revy, well, I don't know, obviously I wasn't around there, but he perceived Revy to be win-at-all-cost mentality.
Yeah. Well, Clough's in the Dean Mundas Hall of Fame, so we've talked about him before. I kind of really don't want to say mine.
Get all your medals together. That's the great line.
As far as I'm concerned, you got them through cheating.
So chuck him in the bin.
Oh, yeah, that was his opening line to the Leeds
players.
Yeah. I was going to go for Jose Mourinho and Carlo Ancelotti.
Oh, yeah.
Either that or Diego Maradona and everybody else.
Haven't Ancelotti and Jose sort of buried it a little bit, buried the hatchet a little bit?
Well, Jose Mourinho thinks that the entire Italian establishment is against him, and he sees Carlo Ancelotti as part of that establishment, doesn't he?
Well, very much so, yeah. Mm. Another one worth mentioning, Arsene Wenger and Alan Pardew.
Yeah.
Remember they nearly squared off against each other once?
I think Pardew would win that. He's Pardew. Yeah.
I don't know if you... Wenger is quite a presence, you know. If he looks a bit...
Not in a fight.
No, I think...
He'd be like a Daddy Long Legs.
He'd be like Dal Sim.
The thinker. Yoga flame. Yeah.
What Wenger would do in a fight is he would dance around you loads without ever actually punching you.
The points... Do you know what? It's got to be Clough. It's got to be Clough and Revy. But who do I give them to?
Pete and Luke. Pete or Luke.
I could give you a point each.
I don't want it. Just give it to Pete. It's a principle.
We're not even sure how many points you actually get. It's just points, isn't it? Who gets the points?
It's kind of like an improvised piece.
A talking one, okay.
Yeah. All right, we have a point each.
You have a point
each. I'll shake your hand, Pete.
We get a joint.
Lefty,
joint
punch you.
All right. So 1 point each there, ladies and gentlemen.
Everyone's happy apart from Jim.
Yeah. I'm incredulous.
A bit like Martin O'Neill, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Because in the Carling Cup final, Aston Villa lost 2-1 to a side that should have been down to 10 men after 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was Phil Dad was a poor decision.
You sound a real cockney there. Phil Dad.
Phil Dad. I said dad by accident.
Phil Dad.
I was thinking of my dad.
It's like when you called like a strange lady mum in the supermarket by accident.
That was embarrassing.
And you're 27.
Never done it. Phil Dowd.
Yeah. It was a poor decision by him.
He didn't even book him.
Well, yeah, I think it's purely because it was so early on, right? That's got to be the only thinking behind it. Otherwise, it's just a baffling decision.
His card arm wasn't warmed up.
Do you not find that you have really different types of referees? Because if you look at Mike Dean, he always gives penalties. If he sees an infringement that would have been a foul on, like, say, the halfway line, he'll give a penalty and it's in the penalty. A lot of referees don't seem to think like that.
Yeah.
But I've never really... Phil Dowd annoyed me for the first time when... I'm not sure if you remember, Mark, because you'll remember this better than me, so you'll probably better correct me. But when it was Wigan Arsenal, and he refused to let a Wigan player back on the pitch, and Arsenal scored. Do you remember that?
I remember vaguely, yeah.
And I thought to myself, what a dick.
Poor old Phil Dowd. Yeah, he's a bit... I mean, you've at least got to book Vidic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Vidic got booked later.
Yeah.
Because he booked, and the obvious one in comparison is he booked Collins for his foul on Owen.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, Owen might have been in there, actually. You know, you can never imagine if he'd have sent him off. The crowd would have gone mental. But, Villa certainly are not the championes.
No. God, but that woman feels stupid now, doesn't she? I mean, the Vidic, he pulled his shirt anyway, and that's a yellow card in itself. Yeah. So, I mean, that's before you've even started. And there was no one else around them, so... I mean, I know. It takes a big, big decision to send off a player in the first few minutes of a cup final, league cup final. And he didn't do it, and it cost... I mean, I know it's difficult to say, it's not as clear-cut as that, but it looked like it probably cost them the game.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I saw it, and I thought to myself, no, don't send him off, because I want to see Villa beat them with, 11-11. Yeah. And then at the end of the game, I thought, well, I should have sent him off. But Michael Owen, Pete.
Yeah, well, I mean, don't turn to me.
Why, a former Newcastle player?
I don't like him anymore. He does not wear the black and the white.
Yeah, he doesn't exist.
I kind of feel sorry for him a little bit. He's not really had the run of it for the past 5 years.
Did he have to go off injured again?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he pulled up with a
Hamstring. And he looked pretty sharp, you know.
Yeah. Did anyone see...
Nice finish as well.
Did anyone see Milner's celebration after the penalty?
Yeah, you reckon that was a dig at Terry?
Well, I'm just speculating.
Explain what he did.
Well, he scored
he's got to have his hand up.
He scored a penalty, and he ran off, and he did that, like, fingers down his eyes to pretend he was like he was crying. And he put his hand on the top of his head like a fin haircut thing. And it was, I mean, that could be Terry. Terry cried after scoring, missing a penalty against United. And that's what I'm saying. Put it out to the listeners, Marcus.
No,
it
won't.
To the listeners.
No, that's not going anywhere.
All right.
Maybe he was doing the notable sad shark, which is popular on the continent.
The tearful shark.
The continent of Birmingham.
The continent of Europe, man, of which we're all a part of.
Yeah.
Rooney scored another goal with his head.
Has he got like 8 in the last 10 games with
eight
his head
the,
now?
8 in the last 7, isn't
like
it? 8 in the last 7 with his head or something?
Surely not.
He's a magnificent footballer this season.
He really is.
I just want to hide him somewhere. Like, can we just kidnap him for the World Cup?
On the Facebook fan page, I put, Rooney is a phenomenon. Watch him break a bone between now and June. And some irate Chelsea fan put, yeah, I hope it's Craig Bellamy's.
Oh dear. Well, that moves us on neatly to the Premier League. Probably the best league in Britain.
England.
Chelsea did play Manchester City. Handshakes all round, bar one.
Yeah.
And Manchester City won 4-2.
Yeah.
Wonderful stuff.
It's a very boring game in the first half, though, wasn't it? Until the two goals really late on. It was actually a real sort of...
What did you make of it? What did you make of Hilario's attempt to save the first goal?
I think his hands were not strong enough for a Premiership goalkeeper.
He seems to plant his feet oddly, Hilario. And it's just reminiscent of a keeper who doesn't play football an awful lot.
Yeah.
So he just doesn't play enough. So he plants his feet in the wrong place. His positioning for Bellamy's goal was past the near post.
Worse than the first one, I would say, because I think he's been thrown by the scuff from Tevez.
Yeah,
but the second one, it was. You should never be beaten from that angle.
No way. It was a good hit from Bellamy. It was a good finish.
I thought Tevez's first goal was really good by Tevez, you know, because he had no right.
He never gives up, does he?
Tevez has got this really brilliant thing he does where he'll keep the ball just near enough to him that if you make a challenge as a defender, you've committed yourself and he's got that space where he can then manipulate
it.
Right.
Or you'd rather commit a foul or nip past you. Yeah,
He celebrated by sort of pointing at Bridge, didn't he? Saying that one's for him, you know.
I read an interesting thing which I was just saying to you boys before we started recording, which was the protocol for that game was changed because ordinarily the home captain would lead his players along to shake hands with their away team. And the referees switched that round because between them and then the officials have switched it round, so the away team's gone past, so Bridge doesn't have the option to have to shake Terry's outstretched hand. That's what's happened, isn't it?
I think, yeah. It's an interesting one. Terry's also made an enemy with Craig Bellamy, although I'd imagine that's probably quite an easy...
Aren't we all enemies with Craig Bellamy? Isn't it just like a given
that
he doesn't like
him? Bellamy said, like, y'all know what he's like. You know what? Y'all know what he's like.
Good switch to a Welsh accent.
We all know what JT's like, you know.
He's
very familiar, JT.
Yeah.
Well, we all know what he's like. But then John Terry said, people in glass houses. Yeah. I was thinking, John Terry probably likes a glass house. He can look in the house without going in the house, see if there's a wife in there he can have sex with.
Well, I mean...
Is there a wife in there? I can see her.
Mm.
It's an opinion.
It's an opinion, Pete.
John Terry sort of looks like a really hard old man, but already, you know, when you see old men that have just got harder with age. Yeah. John Terry, all this focus on his love life has just made you look at his face and consider it from a woman's point of view.
Jesus!
Leering down at you like a big pickled egg.
Oi, Bridge, Terry, Tevez squared up to Terry, didn't he? Who's your money on? In a backroom brawl.
I'd have to say Terry.
I'd say Tevez.
I think Tevez probably has a knife on him.
Tevez would bite your leg.
He'd bite ripping chunks out of his neck with his teeth.
As we know from Street Fighter as well, Tevez can generate electricity, so it just electrocutes Terry.
Do you know what? I didn't think of all these things in my rational head.
Terry's tears would conduct the electricity a lot more effectively as well. Salty water, isn't it?
But do you think, though, that... I know, because Terry, when that happened, he really didn't look interested. You know, normally he would have shouted back and so on. I mean, do you think of, like, Terry's kind of... Has he been a bit humbled by this? Is he not the type of guy to be humbled? Do you think he's that much of a what's it that he won't learn from this? He'll just carry on his normal routine, or do you think he might learn from it?
Well, obviously none of us know him, but it's affected his form.
Yeah, well, everyone knows what he's like, apparently, according to Greg Bellamy.
It's affected his form, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I think Tevez as well. I mean, that's not the sort of what happened on the pitch that led to that sort of confrontation. Wasn't really a big deal at all. I think Tevez has done that just to ruffle him.
Yeah,
and I think it certainly worked. Mm. I mean, his form is suffering, as we know. But I don't know. I mean, because Terry's been. This is by no means the first time there's been some controversy over John Terry, is it? No. At all. I mean, it's bigger than it normally is. But I mean, I don't think he's going to suddenly become a saint. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think the difference between this and the other thing is that I think Terry genuinely feels the tide of opinion is against him in this
game.
Yeah.
He will not have such a. Because when you're in that sort of position, you do feel untouchable.
You're the England, in a bubble, aren't you?
You're England captain, you're peeing in pint glasses and you can't get in trouble. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's all come to a head now, and it's like, oh, maybe
I am wrong, yeah. Which makes Bridges' decision to quit England all the more ridiculous, because he would have definitely played Ashley Cole. Probably not going to be fit enough to play.
But to be honest, I mean, that's kind of screws Terry over, to be fair. So if he really wanted to hurt Terry, I mean, obviously he's thrown away his England career for the next few years, but I mean, if he really wanted to hurt Terry and go, well, this is going to screw you over if I stop playing.
Let's not forget, though, that Wayne Bridge is genuinely going to be very emotionally sort of hurt by this. Because, you know, I think it's fair enough for him to pull out if he wants to. A lot of people are criticising him. But, you know, it's the mother of his children and one of his best mates. You know, it's a very, very difficult thing for him to have to come to deal with this quickly.
Well, they're human beings, like we always try and remember.
It has been said that Wayne Bridge is quite a sensitive lad anyway.
Well, but one pundit, I can't remember who it was, it might have been on Sky, said that he knows Bridge or something as a person, and he fully expects him to change his mind between now and June.
Really?
Yeah. Right. Well, maybe he will.
We'll have to wait and see on that one. Michael Ballack lost his head.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'd have been absolutely beside myself.
That's a suicide tackle.
Yeah. Tevez was in his own half, and Ballack was already on a booking. Yeah. Yeah. That was just silly stuff. He just obviously dislikes Tevez, so he just put that in there. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah. Cost him the game easily.
Yeah. It's like when you're playing a computer game and you wound up, so you think, I'm going to take this sending off just to get a bit of anger out.
Yeah. Well, all that has meant that an Arsenal win at Stoke has brought Arsenal right back in the title.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We say so often, don't we? Oh, Arsenal are out of the race, such and such are out of the race, and then two games later, it's right back in. So we should probably stop making these silly predictions.
Not bad, this league, is it?
No, it's Pompey, are they out of
the race? No.
Not at the moment.
Chance.
Maybe. Yeah, if they get
they've been shot at the side of the track.
For everyone's benefit. For the record, I've been annoyed at a certain section of Arsenal fans going massively over the top again.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's difficult. It's an awful, awful thing to happen.
It was not a malicious challenge.
Well, yeah,
wasn't
this
simple.
Weird
that.
Thing where people do keep saying, "Oh, he's not that type of player." But is anybody that type of player that sort of goes out to hurt people? I mean, there are people that go in hard.
Lucas Hill.
Say Lukey Moore then.
That lad, Tirico, was it? Tirico for Spurs?
Yeah.
He was a dirty...
Argentinian.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, but...
Yeah, but I mean,
two.
Sort of career-ending sort
Diego
of challenges
Maradona.
We're talking about.
It's a horrible, horrible situation, and I just think it really does cheapen it for people to... And I understand people are frustrated and sort of a bit disappointed, but... You know, it cheapens the entire thing by saying, pretending he meant to do it. I mean,
of course he didn't. When I actually saw the tackle, it wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be like a sort of David Booth style, like just horrible high challenge. And obviously it wasn't nice, but it just looked like a sort of 50-50 from the replays I have seen.
Shawcross, his leg was bent. It's not as if he was at full stretch. You know what I mean? If your leg's at full stretch and you do that to a player, that's a last gasp stupid tackle. But it was 50-50 at best.
Absolutely. I mean, you could see Shawcross was clearly emotional himself, and he was showing up.
Well, apparently his mum drove him home from the stadium.
That's right, I mean, he's only a young lad. I think he's 22, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
And it's a great... I mean, the whole thing is a shame, of course it is, but it's also a great shame for Shawcross. You know, he's got his first England cap as well.
Same day as well.
Yeah, it really has overshadowed that, you know.
Well, he'll call up, he'll play on Wednesday, won't he?
I mean, I can understand Wenger's frustrations at this happening to three of his players, but I think the reason it happens is purely because Arsenal... So they're such a possession-heavy side. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Teams are kind of forced into that tough tackling game in a way. And it's although obviously that's over the top. You know, that's this sort of thing happening. You've got to try and do something to stop it. But I mean, what can you do? You can't really retrospectively punish teams for going in hard if no one's leg's broken. Do you know what I mean? It's just not in the spirit of the game.
I remember Wenger going on a massive one sort of late 90s when Arsenal were getting those spate of red cards. They got about 11 in one season.
Yeah.
They were going about how Wenger was mouthing off about how, oh, well, you don't want the Premier League to turn to Serie A. It's boring, you know. You've got to have tough challenges and stuff. And it seems to completely turn itself around.
Well, yeah, but there's a a sort of limit on tough, isn't there? There's leg breaking and ball winning.
They say, oh, what happened to Diaby? He got an awful injury a few years ago. He did, yeah. But about a year around that time, he broke Ivan Campo's leg with an abysmal challenge. True. So the bottom line is, not it doesn't happen to Arsenal, of course it does, but it happens to everyone.
It does.
And the game is played at such a high pace these days, the impact injuries are much worse.
Mm. Francis Jeffers got his leg broken by Ryan Shawcross, didn't he, as well?
Okay, right.
Is that right? Yeah, which is obviously not fair to, I'm not for a moment saying that Shawcross is malicious. I genuinely think that's coincidence. Just want to point that out.
Well, good thing for Arsenal, though, out of that, is that they went on to win the game.
Well, yeah, the players that were most visibly shaken by it were Fabregas and Vermaelen, and it's interesting that they were the goal scorers. That's right. Really,
I mean, they loved a dirty challenge, Fabregas.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They really, you could see the passion when they scored those goals.
Yeah.
You know, a friend of mine was in the Arsenal crowd, and he just said everyone just went ballistic. It was such a release. Mm. You know, a big Sol Campbell was enjoying it.
Yeah.
Well, at Birmingham, when they had to Eduardo, they went on to lose the game. So
They drew the game, didn't they?
They did, but it's, you know, it's very, very cathartic in a sense, I think. And maybe with the run-in that's coming up, Arsenal are going to sort of get a new sort of drive from this, because obviously it's they're a group of friends, you know, that squad.
You, so you get that impression.
As you will be. So it's going to spur them on. And, well, obviously, I've won, they can do it. I think a lot of neutrals do, weirdly, as well.
A bunch of young lads and Sol Campbell. And I tell you what, Sol Campbell could have a Premier League winner's medal at the end of the season.
Imagine that.
That is an incredible thought.
I don't think Arsenal will win it.
Can I say something a bit... I wouldn't be opposed if he went to the World Cup.
Oh come on.
Seriously.
Come on.
I'm being serious.
Yeah, as a spectator.
As a pundit. No, I wouldn't. I'm not rooting for him to go there, but the way I'll send
it. Let's hear what you're going to be saying when he loses it, goes mental in the North London Derby and storms out at half time.
You'll see.
Which definitely will
won't let anybody down. Well, from the top to the bottom. Portsmouth. They won.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter, by the looks of things.
Portsmouth and Clark Carlisle won. It's one of the worst defensive displays I've ever seen.
Hey, well, he won Countdown the other week.
It's true, but a football game was a bridge too far for him.
Yeah.
He's a good lad,
Clark Carlisle.
Oh, he is, but he's a terrible defender. He was rubbish. He's genuinely terrible.
He's been good for them this season, but he's made a couple of silly errors.
Well, I think I'll redress that slightly. He's an average player. I mean, he's okay.
Well,
but when he's bad, he's terrible.
Well, anyway, Portsmouth won the game.
That's the most important thing. And you know why? Because the Nuge was an energy ball and he couldn't play.
There you are, you see.
He definitely would have scored a hat-trick and he would have hurt us.
Yeah.
He would have hurt us.
You'd have just been sort of sent down, wouldn't you? As like a sort of sympathy thing if the Nuge had played. It would have been such a scorching defeat.
Yeah. Portsmouth... I mean, it's not an ideal situation. It's far from it, Luke.
It looks like they're going to go back into the court because Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs have appealed the voluntary administration as well now, which is bad news because they really want their money.
Yeah.
And so obviously, I probably owe the money, so that's completely fair and reasonable, but it's not such great news for fans of the club. You know, one of the things that came out of the ashes towards the back end of last week was that just to give you a little insight into how Peter Story operates is that his nephew was earning 60 grand a year as a player liaison officer at Pompey.
I mean,
apparently they're 103 backroom staff, Pompey.
He's Diego Maradona in charge, isn't it?
I think I'd prefer him. At least he's done something in the game.
Wish I had a rich uncle.
So basically 60 grand a year for effectively screwing in players' light bulbs.
Yeah.
And taking them out.
Well, saying that, though, I mean, is that not maybe a normal salary for that sort of person? Because there's so much money
not
at
when
club.
When the club's up the...
Yeah, but, you know, if he's got a contract...
if he's got a contract, fair enough, but I would argue the motivation would give him the contract in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, wasn't the kit man on like 40 grand, wasn't it?
Yeah, but he's really big, so I'm not going to slag him off.
Okay.
Weren't you on a salary?
Yeah.
To be fair, actually, James might have a point. That might be a kit man salary. I've no idea.
Yeah, who knows?
But the kit man and the assistant as well.
Yeah.
Is that too much? Is that gone too far?
I could. Will they get deducted the 9 points? Because there's talk of if they do, they might appeal it or something.
Yeah.
I'm under the impression they will get the deduction, but they're appealing... they've got plans to appeal the process. I mean, that's the rules. I mean, I don't support that.
Well, can you imagine if they appealed and it got overturned, they didn't have the 9 points and they stayed up? I mean, you'd never hear the end of that.
But can you imagine?
From the club.
Sean Bean would be furious. He'd be riding in on a horse. This isn't on.
Other clubs down the back end of the leagues, they'll be upset because, I mean, they've
been... Yeah, of course. But whether you agree with the deduction for going to administration is a separate issue, but the fact is that they are the rules. Yeah. So you can't appeal against the rules if you sit on these.
It's a mandatory. It's a mandatory appeal, just sort of born out of desperation, I think, isn't it?
I'd say so. So much of what Portsmouth does these days, on and off the field, is born of desperation.
We need to pay some solicitors more money. We need too much money kicking around.
Well, Portsmouth aren't the only club that are in terrible. Straight in there, James. Do you know what? I have to agree with you. Yeah, I really do.
It's not a laughing matter.
It's not a laughing matter, Pete. Chester City have been expelled from the conference with immediate effect. Apparently, the Football Conference Board, they recommended the action against the league's bottom club when they all met recently.
Yeah, they've not been able to fulfil a couple of fixtures, have they? Yeah, some of the players refused to get on the team bus because they weren't being paid.
That's it.
And I mean,
they couldn't field a team.
No, yeah. And as sad as it is to see, you don't really want to see it affecting other teams, and it's obviously not their fault. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those decisions they probably made regrettably, I would have thought.
Yeah, well, they were handed a 25-point penalty after falling into administration last summer. Mm.
The 33 points adrift or something, weren't they?
It's such a shame, though. I mean, we all remember them, in a league above that, I think. They weren't always down in that league.
No.
Are they going to start up again as, like, Hollyoaks Town?
Yeah. Well, who are the cast of Hollyoaks going to support, James?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they could always do what Adrianians did when they had to finish. They came back as Airdrie United, so it could be Chester United. Mm. Chester Forest, Chester Wednesday, something like that.
Yeah. You know. Chester United.
Chester Alexandra. So, but all the best to
Chester
everyone.
Milan.
Sporting Chester.
Chester draws.
Chaps and chapesses. The SBL, Rangers 1, Celtic 0. Is the title all but over?
It would seem so, wouldn't it?
Carl Lafferty disgraced himself again.
Carl Lafferty's massive, isn't he? I didn't realise.
He goes down
so
like
big.
A sack of shit, though. Yeah. Do you see what he did? He took a dive, get a player sent off again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he did.
Charlie Nicholas, that was quite upset with
him.
Yeah, he slagged him, didn't he? Yeah. He said it's not a question of ability because he's got none or something.
Yeah, that's right.
Charlie Nicholas loves Celtic. Yeah. You know, obviously, he used to play for them. He looked so wound up after the match.
I mean, from the highlights I saw of the game, I confess I didn't see all of it. It did look like Rangers bossed it, really.
After the sending off, obviously, they really. Yeah. But I think,
before that.
Yeah, I think.
Boric made a great double save, didn't he?
Yeah,
he's a decent keeper. Did you see the Hearts Aberdeen match? No, I didn't think you would have done. Lovely little overhead kick from Johnson in that game.
Was there?
Yeah.
Talk us through it then.
Well, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't an athletic one.
No.
But I liked it for that reason, because, you know, save that for the Champions League.
He just fell backwards.
Yeah. But the ball was like really high up in the air, and he just, perfect timing, fell back, leg up, bush, pop bang, lovely, 1-0. And that was the only goal of the game.
It's
the little things, Pete. You're right.
It's the put words in my mouth. It's the first.
I'll take them back.
It's the first Scotland match with the new fella.
Oh yeah, Craig Levine.
Levine.
He's Boyd's in there. Boyd.
There was talk he was going to call up the two boys who were disgraced and told them that they were never going to play again. But he's not bothered, has he?
Has he not?
Nah.
Scotland have lost one of their Champions League places to Belgium.
Yeah. I mean, well, how do you think that's going to affect the league?
But I still think Rangers or Celtic will win it.
That's not what I meant.
He's not even saying Rangers or Celtic. He's on the fence still.
Well, you know, it's guaranteed.
Well, isn't it to do with rankings of the leagues?
I think
it?
So. Yeah.
In some Opta heavy way.
Was there a little talk of Serie A losing one of their places?
Oh, was
the Bundesliga
and the Bundesliga, wasn't it?
I think they were going to win one.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got
is
to
that
move
right?
with the time. Yeah. You've got to move with the times, though. By the way, speaking of, you know, I said them last week that I'd happily see a Champions League spot go to the Maltese Champions into like seventh place in Premier League.
Yes, yeah.
Someone, one of the listeners, sent me a little message saying that guess who scored a hat trick for Valletta in the Maltese League at the weekend?
So Stanley Matthews?
Jordi Cruyff.
Really?
Really?
He's turning up for Valletta in one of the biggest clubs in Malta. Yeah,
that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, little fact.
Great.
But you've got to move with the times, haven't you? I mean, you shouldn't. These big countries or traditional footballing giants shouldn't automatically get these places. You know, I was not talking about Scotland. I mean, Italy. Mm. I mean, Bundesliga is a very competitive, sort of highly rated league these days.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it should reflect that.
Really tight there.
It is very tight at the top. It's only 4 points separate the top three.
Yeah, I mean, also, they've got a similar sort of race for fourth that we have as well, where it's very, very tight between those clubs. And it is a really... we talk about this quite a lot, but I think it's the best-attended league in Europe. And you can see when you watch the highlights of games, the atmosphere is really, really strong there.
The prices are competitive for tickets and stuff, aren't they? What happened with Podolski?
What, as a human being?
Because he's gone.
What, young player of the 2006 World Cup.
And he went to Cologne for about €10 million.
Cologne.
No, it's Cologne, isn't it?
Well, in English, Cologne.
Okay, right. Yeah.
Cologne, as a native would say.
Okay,
so well done.
Thanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, with Podolski, I think he scored one goal, wasn't he, since he's been back there? He's been absolutely abysmal. He never really took off at Bayern Munich. And apparently, I read this today, when he was playing for Germany. Michael Ballack pointed out to him a run he should have made that he didn't make, and he slapped him.
Really?
I don't know whether this was on the pitch or like in training or whatever.
But yeah.
Ballack went down. It's shocking. It's just the attitude on him is unbelievable. It's also worth remembering that Podolski was sort of being spoken of in the same sort of
bracket,
yes, as Wayne Rooney at the time around the World Cup and stuff like that. It's just incredible. A lot of people were actually saying, well, you know, if you know anything about football, you know that Lucas Podolski is actually better than Wayne Rooney. Yeah. So, where are you now, then, people?
They're the standout
still
players.
In royalty, I think.
They're both the standout young players, weren't they, of that World Cup?
Yeah.
Him and Klose were a great partnership for Germany as well for a time. Strike partnership, of course. Mm. Yeah, it's a funny one with him, but.
We'll watch his progress, Marcus.
That's right. And Jordi Kroos.
What he needs to do is come to the Premier League if he wants to prove himself. Yeah.
No, don't think he can hack it.
Best league in the world.
Exactly.
An early kickoff here, and some of the defenders are still having breakfast.
Oh, emails.
Bit of Barry Davis there, Petey. That's class, mate.
Oh, Pete. Marry me. But first, read out an email.
Will do. This is from a young man by the name of Carl Lawson. Ramble Force, ho, lads.
Whoa.
Just on Ricardo Fuller's earrings. Like, we did a big shout out for Ricardo Fuller.
Well, James mentioned Ricardo Fuller on the Ramble Extra.
He's a bit of a flash one.
He's a bit of a flash one.
Anyway, just on Ricardo Fuller's earrings. They're not actually earrings. They're plugs that look like earrings. According to Graham Paul, he asked the Premier League to wear them to avoid infection.
What?
I met the guy on the way to Jamaica last October with my dad. Seemed a decent guy, signed my sketchbook and discussed the failing state of football in Jamaica, LOL. He doesn't go on to say anything about the plugs, but I mean...
So he presumably has them to replace the earrings while he's playing football?
Yeah, sort of keep the hole open.
Does he heal really quickly like Wolverine? Is that why?
Yeah.
Thanks
for clearing that up.
Yeah, it's nice to hear that he's not flash in person as well.
Yeah. He says, PS, also saw Deco on that rainy day in October in Heathrow. Was just after the Chelsea versus Liverpool game and there was an international break on.
He's a flash git as well.
Yeah. He's spotting flash footballers at airports.
I like Deco.
Where is he? What's happened to Deco? Has he just been injured for ages?
He's knocking about Chelsea.
He's taking it easy.
Yeah.
He's on the training grounds.
Yeah, he's on the plane. Get him on that plane.
Hit a few free kicks. Luke's got an email.
Hello, Ramble Force.
Oh!
Hello!
Hello!
Must email in on something I saw this week on La Sexta News, which is obviously a Spanish news programme. Tenerife are charging a minimum of €350 for the cheapest ticket for their home match against Real.
Worth it.
I know that some Aston Villa fans are aggrieved because the likes of Birmingham charge them £50 for an away ticket, but I think the Tenerife fans can feel a little more aggrieved themselves. The idiots were still queuing around the stadium to buy tickets this week, though. Fools! Keep up the good work, Rob in Valencia.
Robin Valencia.
That is an absolutely outrageous amount of money for a game of football.
Well, they got absolutely smashed as well, didn't they? So.
Yeah, they got beat 5, didn't they? Or something like that. Yeah, I mean, €350.
That's incredible.
Euros.
Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out, Rob.
Yeah. Is that not Real Madrid bullying them into making them do that?
Well, they probably just think that there's so many people, the demand to see the Galacticos is so high that they can charge. I mean, supply and demand, isn't it? That's right. Simple, supply and demand.
On the other end of that spectrum.
Harry Redknapp behind
On the other end of the spectrum, somebody else emailed in, I forget his name, so apologies for that, but there's a side in Germany, the second division side, who are, if you're unemployed, then you get to go to the game for €1.
They're a Frankfurt side. It's not Eintracht Frankfurt, I don't think.
Oh, but it's one of those.
It's one of the Frankfurt sides.
Did we not talk about, not that recently, but a while ago, about how Villarreal are giving away tickets to sort of unemployed people for nothing?
This sort of thing does seem to be starting to happen like all over Europe, and it's really, really good to see. I mean, hopefully it'll sort of start a
Fulham do some good offers.
Take note, Tenerife.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, you know, that's not going to get people working, is it?
No.
It's not going to induce them into...
Into labour.
Into labour, is it?
All you're going to get is loads of broken Brits abroad with too much money to spend on this.
It's not the responsibility of a football club to get people into employment.
Yes, it is.
It's all of our responsibility, Marcus.
It is
at Portsmouth if you happen to be the nephew of the chief. Yeah.
Good callback. Like it.
Dear James, read out an email, please.
I will. Ramble Force Ho!
What's popping?
Ryan Ricketts. And a happy St. David's Day to you all. Honourable mention to Giggs's sexy feet for Pete.
Yeah.
Rhymes, like it. Also, what with Newcastle's plight last season and now the ongoing troubles at Pompey, it appears that there is a hex on the Ramble Forces club season by season. Is James or Jim now worrying about Arsenal's future next season, the possible loss of Cesc, Wenger, or even the mighty arsed Sol, thus leading to a tense relegation battle? And does Marcus fear administration, maybe, for Leighton Orient? Now, I don't know why he says Orient.
Why does this guy think I support Leighton Orient?
Well, I don't know. His name's Nick Jenkins. You're going to have to take it out with Nick.
Yeah, Nick.
Marcus doesn't support Leighton Orient.
No,
he doesn't. I've
scored against Leighton Orient under-18s before.
Have you?
Yeah.
It's all been downhill since then.
I don't trust a man who doesn't support a team or isn't very vocal about it on a podcast like what I am.
Impartial, impartial anchorman. Yeah, move on.
We all know, but he ain't going to tell you.
I think he'll be a little bit late for me to get concerned about Portsmouth.
I will constantly worry about Fabregas leaving. It's like if you like end up going out with a girl who doesn't realise that she's amazing, but then she sort of grows and grows to realise that she's actually brilliant and that she's too good for you.
You can't compete.
Yeah.
Well, Cesc will leave at some stage. Of course, maybe not this summer. But
incidentally, I had a dream about Cesc Fabregas, and I asked him in this dream, how do you pronounce your first name? And he said Cesc. And you call him Cesc.
I've always called him Cesc. It's only been recently that he's been called Cesc, isn't it?
No, I've never heard him called Cesc by anyone but you.
Really? Okay, yeah. That's interesting. You know, Motson went
mental. I love how you've actually kind of... That's real evidence for you. It was a dream I had.
Yeah, I'm still going to call him Cesc. But did you see that John Motson was calling Ricardo Rocha Roacha?
He will do.
He was calling him Roacha.
Marcus, so hello. Who is going to get the Championship Manager goodie bag this week?
The man who met Ricardo Fuller.
Carl Lawson.
Carl.
He'll need the bag because he goes to airports a lot. Yep. But you're not allowed to take the glass on the plane.
You can play Championship Manager on the plane as well.
Yeah. You can do it all on the plane.
Yeah. And drink out of his Championship Manager pint glass.
Yeah, well, he won't be allowed that, will he?
Yeah, that's
what Pete's saying.
Oh, sorry, Pete. Yeah, I wasn't listening
to
him.
He will be able to wear his Championship Manager T-shirt.
He will, yeah.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Carl, it's on its way.
What a contrast with the previous manager.
Oh, what a contrast.
Uncle
the previous
Barry place. Davis.
Yeah, great stuff. It's the closest we're ever going to getting him on the show.
Heck. Pete, you really have...
pulled it out of the bag.
You've touched me in my special place.
Well, I'm not the special one here. The profile player is the special one.
Yes.
And who is it?
Cast your minds back to when we interviewed Kenny Pavey on the show.
Friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Kenny Pavey.
KP.
There's only one Kenny Pavey.
Yeah. Kenny, who would you like to see inducted into the Dean Windass Hall of Fame?
Easily, I would love to put me favourite player Teddy Sheringham in there.
Edward Paul Teddy Sheringham.
Yeah, there he is.
Come on in.
Stedward Tedward.
In a moment. Stedward Tedward.
The evergreen.
Or he had all those names to choose from. Why did he go with Teddy? Oh. What an idiot.
Well, as David Pleat once called him Terry Sheringham.
Which is actually a better name. Terry Sheringham.
Yeah, Teddy Sheringham. MBE.
Yeah.
Not the O is not...
For
nowhere near
or
it. MBE.
For a large
once called him.
For a large proportion of his career, had to be known as the evergreen Teddy Sheringham.
Yeah, absolutely. Played for a number of English clubs, most notably Spurs, Manchester United, West Ham, Colchester United, Aldershot,
Portsmouth.
Portsmouth as well.
Oh, very good.
Thanks. Just thought I'd enjoy myself for a rare moment. It's funny, actually. Looking at Sheringham, his career, he retired very late on, much like Sir Stanley Matthews, the previous.
Oh, yeah.
For the previous week.
So, not a contrast to the previous profile.
That's right. A highly decorated player he was.
Mm.
But only towards the end. Mm. He went a while. But we'll start at the beginning. He was born on the 2nd of April, 1966.
God! A year before the Summer of Love. Just before England's World Cup triumph as well. Yeah, same year as Eric Cantona.
Yeah. Is that a coincidence, people?
Yes.
It probably is. Almost certainly.
What with time and that?
Yeah. Oh, don't slag time, okay?
Or what? It'll come back and get you?
Yeah. One could say his game was based on being one step ahead of everybody else, Mr. Sheringham.
Football is a game played with the brain, Johan Cruyff.
Are you telling him or are you quoting him?
I'm just saying that's a particularly relevant quote for Telly Sheringham's career.
Oh, okay. Very
Some people
so.
Call it a one night stand, but we can call it paradise. Simon Le Bon.
Not relevant.
Sorry, I just thought we were doing quotes.
Yeah.
You are a bell end.
Order. He started his professional career at Millwall, and a lot of people say that Sheringham, he was quite a down to earth guy. You know, he was very aware of his roots and you know his personality and playing style that people said were developed at Millwall in the 80s alongside people like Terry Hurlock. You remember Terry?
Yeah.
Absolute animal he was. But I'm sure he was a lovely fella, just in case he's listening. Yeah, people do say that, but he was actually... we spoke of flash players before. Well, he was a little bit flash in his young days. Because George Graham was in charge when he was at Millwall. And Graham really didn't like him because he was trying to get Sheringham to cut out all the flash stuff because obviously George Graham is, you know, a bit boring as a bloke and a manager, I'd imagine. Sheringham said, I was a flash kid in those days, a real showboater with a repertoire of all flicks and touches. I wasn't interested in scoring boring goals. They had to come from benders into the top corner or chipping the keeper or something like that. And he said, George Graham told me in no uncertain terms to cut that fancy nonsense out of the game.
He's having none of that.
But to be fair to Sheringham, he did say the other players told me that the manager couldn't stand the sight of me. And he said at the time I didn't appreciate that, but he was obviously trying to teach me a valuable lesson. And because of this, he was loaned out to Aldershot very briefly, but he was also loaned out to Swedish Division 2 side Djurgårdens, I think that's pronounced.
Yeah, Djurgårdens, yeah.
In Sweden, and of course that's where Kenny Pavey mentioned Sheringham, because obviously Pavey went out to Sweden, he's still there.
Also supports Millwall, doesn't he? He must be a hero.
Big time.
I would wager that's why he chose him.
Yeah. Well, when he was playing in Sweden, they were paid to a different amount of money if they to win a game or not. Sheringham said they got £40 if they drew a game when he was playing for the Swedish side, and £80 for a win. So
it's funny because normally in, let's say, Serie A, you get a lot more if you lose.
Yeah. Good, James. Very good. He said, so a lot of these players, they are literally playing for their livelihood, you know?
Yeah.
And he said that he kind of looked at the game a bit differently then, because when he's trying all these fancy flicks and so on, he's thinking...
It's not going to buy you a pint at the end of the day, Teddy, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, no, he was more thinking of his fellow teammates, actually. Yeah. Thinking it's a bit unfair on them if I'm trying to play for myself here. You know, and he became a bit more of a team player there, and... He learned a lot of footballing lessons when he was in Sweden. He had a good time there, though. He scored 13 goals in 21 games, and he helped them win the Division 2 North title. Mm-hmm. They won promotion that year, so he had a good time in Sweden.
We were playing football on commission. Yeah. That's essentially what they're doing.
Yeah.
So, it should happen to all of them, James. Hey, right in my way.
Yeah. There you are. Thank goodness you don't. He came back from Sweden and became a regular start for Millwall, formed a formidable partnership with Tony Cascarino.
Mm. Oh, yeah. One of my most hated footballers of all time.
Tony Cascarino, to be sure.
Yeah.
That's right. He was the club's top goal scorer for four seasons when he was there. In July 91, he was 25 in July 91.
Yeah.
Mm. He was sold to Nottingham Forest. 25, he's playing for Forest. Spurs and United have still to come.
Yeah.
I can't remember a young Teddy Sheringham.
That's right.
Yeah. Doesn't exist.
He was signed for £2 million to play alongside Nigel Clough. And I love this. Brian Clough insisted on calling him Edward. Oh, not Teddy.
Now then, Edward. Now then, young man.
They did all right for us. Finished eighth in the first division, but he famously scored the first ever goal shown live on Sky Sports.
That's right.
Wow. Nice little, can't take that away from him.
That's when football started.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that's basically the first goal ever goal. That's what
Richard
Tim Lovejoy would say.
He might have.
And I say goal, Marcus, because that's what it is.
He did. He signed later for Spurs for 2.1 million. And he was the Premier League's, or the Premiership as it was then, top scorer in 92-93 with 22 goals. 21 for Tottenham and one with Forest. And that was the Premiership's first season.
Yeah.
Inaugural season.
Mm. Inaugural?
Yeah. There you are, you see. He didn't win his first England cap until the age of 27.
So still time for you, mate.
Well, I'm on it.
You've not made yourself unavailable for selection for the summer, so...
Not just yet.
Well, you're signed to the Ramble and you're happy.
Although after, you know, what's been going on, I might take myself out of the equation like Wayne Bridges.
Pete, he knows about you and his mum.
In 1996, he played in the European Championships for England under El Tell.
He was great in that tournament as well.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, he formed a wonderful partnership with Alan Shearer.
The SAS.
The other SAS. There were two SASs.
They were indeed. And he was, because I can remember the build-up to that tournament and getting so annoyed that Sheringham was in there. I was like, Ferdinand, Fowler, even Ian Wright, Chris Sutton. Why not Sutton and Shearer up front for England?
Guy Whittingham.
Well,
but after Guy Whittingham's time, actually.
Yeah. A young David Nugent. Yeah, very young.
It was a tournament too far for Guy Whittingham.
Paul Walsh.
You know, it's another name.
If nothing else.
But do you know what I mean, though? I mean, Pete, you must... Les Ferdinand, he was keeping him out the side.
Well, yeah, but...
Can we use his full name, please?
Sir Les Ferdinand.
Sir Les Ferdinand. Yeah, I was a little bit annoyed, but I mean... I did like probably like Sheringham more on an international stage.
Yeah, I think you're right.
He was so good at picking his times.
He's a better foil for Shearer, Sheringham.
Yeah, totally. They did work together so brilliantly.
I've never had a player, I've changed my opinion on him so much from when I was just like, what is he doing in the squad? And then the tournament came and I thought, bloody hell.
Oh, you were a young man.
Yes, it's acceptable. We all make mistakes.
Yeah. Probably the only one I've made. apart from joining this podcast. His finest moment, perhaps, in an England shirt was against Holland when he scored two and they won 4. Mm.
That was a superb performance from the team and from him.
Rousing.
And arousing.
Yeah.
Barry Davis commented on that, commentated on that match.
What did he say?
I do remember when Shearer and Sheringham both got subbed off. I think it was 4-0 at the time or 4-1. And Robbie Fowler and... I forget who else came on, and he went, oh yes, sensible substitutions. He kept going, like, every time a goal went in, he kept going, it's three, it's four.
Yeah. Oh, you got to love him.
And
commentating was his business, and business was good.
Oh dear, but he was signed, back to Sheringham once again, he was signed by Manchester United in 1997 at the age of 31.
Yeah.
To fill Cantona's shoes, and Cantona just retired.
Question marks over that signing at the time.
Yeah, well. Andy Cole was happy.
Well, that's to come later. But think about it, he's born in the same year as Cantona. Cantona
is retired.
Is retired, and then Sheringham has moved to the biggest club of his career, maybe apart from Portsmouth, at the age of 31.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And there was the Andy Cole incident, which...
Do you know where that started?
It was against Bolton.
It started off... Was it not... Sheringham said something, so I'm trying to help you, I'm only trying to help you or something, and Andy Cole was like, I don't need your help, and he went, I'm trying to help you, man, and he went, I'm not your mate. And the way Andy Cole told the story when I read it was that it just made Andy Cole sound like a massive idiot.
Well, even from Andy Cole's point of view.
So they fell out, they didn't like each other.
His version of events still made him out to be an idiot. I've not heard Sheringham's version of events.
Outstanding.
Well, apparently, that it was a game against Bolton scored, and Sheringham blamed Cole for the goal. I can't remember exactly what it was. Maybe not tracking back or something, I don't know.
No, but they disliked each other before that, because Cole was up in arms when United signed Sheringham.
Right. But apparently they never spoke again.
No, they didn't associate each other at all.
But if you were Sheringham, you know, you've come on and saved the European Champions League.
Oh, yeah.
You scored the equaliser. Would you not look at him in the dressing room and go,
give a little
still
wee.
Angry with me, big
little
man?
Wee. Yeah, give a little wee. Yeah.
Shall I have your winner's medal?
Yeah. Passing the trophy. Have a go on this.
We're going back to the 97-98, you know, at the end of that season, he played a big part in England qualifying for World Cup 98. And he played in that tournament, but that was when Michael Owen came on the international scene and kind of took his place after a couple of games in that World Cup. But
because Owen didn't start, did he? He came
that's
on.
Right. He came on against, was it Tunisia, the first game, and then Romania, the second game, and of course he scored. And he started against Colombia and Argentina.
Yeah.
He hadn't won a major trophy by the age of 33.
Okay.
Teddy Sheringham. And until United...
Still early days, Marcus.
Well, yeah, until United won the Premiership. And then he scored in the FA Cup final, which they won, of course. And then, well, we just mentioned the Champions League.
The big one.
Yeah.
Which was incredible scenes, I think, I think we can all agree.
I mean, even from a sort of... someone who's got no particular affiliation at all to Manchester United. I mean, that was some turnaround. That the overriding memory I've got of that was Sammy Cafour on his knees just punching the turf.
I remember just knowing when they got the second corner, just knowing they were going to score.
Because
they were so jammy like that at the time. And obviously it was because they were a talented squad, but it was just, you just knew.
It's a hallmark of Ferguson's tenure at United.
Yeah,
they just really do battle on to the very last sort of whistle.
That's right,
And it's no coincidence they get so many late goals.
That's right. In 2000, 2001, Sheringham, he was United's top goal scorer and he was voted Player of the Year by the PFA and the Football Writers Association. Unbelievable.
Do you think Andy Cole voted for him?
I don't think he was considered for a vote. unbelievable stuff. And in after which he re-signed for Spurs in the early noughties. But still playing his part for England, qualifying for World Cup 2002. Scored in that game against Greece with the Beckham match.
Yes.
When it was 2-0, came on. He was a bit of a super sub.
That'd have been his last goal for England, would it?
Quite possibly.
Yeah, I think it might have been.
But yeah, he was a bit of a super sub back then, old Sheringham.
Yeah.
Played at the finals themselves. I remember him playing against Argentina. Mm. And he came on against Brazil, which was to be his last match. He retired from England at the age of 36.
Wow.
The thing about Sheringham, I remember in that Argentina game, he came on, didn't he?
Yeah.
And he did his best to really sort of slow it down and
try
and keep hold of the ball a little bit more, because England had, under Eriksen, had a bit of a tendency to go headless chicken a lot.
Yeah.
And they were one up, weren't they? Was it a Beckham penalty?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember just really, really sort of calm head, trying to get all the other players to calm down and stuff, and he was an asset to them. He's just his experience around the camp as well, I think.
Yeah, very much so. He played for Pompey, of course, 2003-2004, I think it was.
Our first season in the Premier League, that was.
Yeah.
Mm. He was sort of integral part of Pompey's setting up as well.
Weighed in with some goals.
Yeah.
He really did well. I mean, he was pretty popular down
there. There was actually talk of an England recall, even then, weirdly enough.
Chiefly by me, Jim?
Yeah, mostly by you, if I remember rightly.
I'll claim it.
Yeah.
No, he was very popular down at Fratton Park, and you know, he's a clever player. He's one of those players, it might sound a bit odd, but when you actually go and watch him in the flesh, you appreciate him so much more,
because
the positions he takes up, he drops off, he's intelligent, he's always making himself available, you know. He's not necessarily always the highlight grabber, he's not going to be starred highlight reels or headline grabber, but he really does, you know, make a contribution and a valuable one.
Very much so. He signed for West Ham after Portsmouth. They were in the Championship at the time. But he was the division's third highest goal scorer with 20 goals. He won the Championship Player of the Season award and helped them reach the playoff final, where they came back to the Premiership.
Mm. He was, luckily enough, because his game was never based on pace.
That's right. Mm.
He could just go. You know, and it would never affect him that he'd lost a yard, because he never had a yard anyway. Really, it was in his head, and it's a cliche to say, but it is genuinely true of him more than anyone else I've seen, I think.
Yeah. Well, he, on 19th of August 2006, he became the oldest outfield player in the history of the division, 40 years old. he was still on West Ham's books after his 41st birthday, which is just incredible. He became the third oldest player to appear in an FA Cup final. It was the 3-3 match against Liverpool.
Yeah.
So close to a winner's match.
Well, a minute away or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. He beat his own record at the age of 40 and 266 days. Beat his own record for being the oldest Premiership scorer.
Previously held by Roger Meier?
Probably. Yeah,
doing the Roger Meier just breaking his own age records over and over again.
Well, I think Kanu's probably broken that record.
officially.
That's right. Kanu should say that he'd get that title.
Yeah. Maybe he'll do it when he retires.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that's
I'm 87.
Yeah, that's right. He signed for Colchester United in July 2007. And he was the oldest player in all four divisions at the time of the Football League.
He's clearly a man who just loves to play football.
Yeah.
Like the level wasn't an issue to him at the time. He wasn't one of those players that insisted on going out at the top and sort of leaving a sort of glittering legacy. He just enjoyed it so much that see he just wanted to carry on for as long
as he could.
And
he was still good.
Yeah, he was still good.
He made over 700 league appearances in his career. Unfortunately, his career ended on a bit of a low, because Colchester were relegated from the Championship. But still.
I'm sure he did his best.
He said that his dad wanted him to carry on and beat Sir Stanley Matthews' record of playing at 50, but he was like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Come on, Dad. You've been pressuring me for so long.
One of the things I forgot to mention about Stanley Matthews last week, and I annoyed myself by not doing it, is that Matthews used to train in weighted boots.
Oh, did he?
And so when he got on the pitch...
Oh, he's much lighter.
Yeah, he's much quicker on his feet, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a good little thing.
I'm not suggesting Teddy Sheringham did the same.
Yeah. Incidentally, when he came out and announced his retirement... A friend of mine was working on a television, a very well known television broadcaster,
yeah.
And he went to meet Sheringham to get him into the studio, but Sheringham turned up late. The guests should be there, you know, at the latest half an hour before the show kicks off. They can get the makeup on and be briefed and all. And Sheringham hadn't arrived, and it was about 5 minutes before the show starts, and everyone's like, where the hell is he? You know, he's going to announce his retirement, you know, kind of thing. And so my mate ran over to get him from the gatehouse, and one of the guards said, no, he's gone in the building. He was like, oh, crap. So he ran back over, because it was a bit of a maze to the studio, he was saying. So he ran over there, sprinted over there, and in the foyer, Sheringham was there just having a little drink of water from the water dispenser. And my mate's like, oh, all right, Teddy. And he just looked at him and gone... Teddy Sheringham just looks at me and goes, are you in a rush? Oh, yeah. He knows what time the show starts.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, sorry, we've just got to be on air in a few minutes. Sheringham went, well, it's all about timing, isn't it?
Did he really? Yeah. That's great stuff. Get in there, son.
Brilliant.
Great stuff.
Yeah, so Sheringham. But as you said, you know, in his pomp, there was nobody better at holding the ball up, bringing others into play.
I like to think he said that when he scored a goal. It's all about timing, isn't it?
Just to Andy Cole.
Yeah. What a man to bring others into play, though.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, I shall end with a quote from the great man himself.
Yeah.
It's all about timing, isn't it? Come on in, Teddy.
And it's your time to come into this Hall of Fame.
That's right.
Like, is it maybe a bit late to say get him on that plane?
Him and Sol.
Yeah.
Yeah, get them on. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. If you'd like to get in contact with us, then please email podcast@thefootballramble.com and check out the website, thefootballramble.com. Gentlemen, how are we doing for Betway? What are you going for this week?
I've gone for a treble this weekend.
So have I.
Yeah, have you? Well, I don't think it's the same as mine. I've gone for Arsenal to beat Burnley.
Yep.
West Ham to win.
Against Bolton.
And Manchester United to win as well.
Away to Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone for Palermo to beat Livorno. Serie A. I've gone for Athletic Bilbao, Dean Windass Hall of Famers.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
to beat Real Valladolid. And I've gone for Everton to beat Hull. Mm. And I've gone for that because I think it'll happen.
That is a multinational treble.
Yes.
Multinational wins.
I've gone for Arsenal to beat Burnley. I never bet on Arsenal, so it's almost certain that they'll come a cropper.
You're going to single-handedly derail their title. Yeah.
Well, I went for a Liverpool draw last week and that didn't bloody come up, did it? So this week I'm going to go for loving Man United to win. I need the points.
It's a banker.
Points mean prizes.
Yeah.
Betway.com/thefootballramble to peruse those bets and maybe have a bet yourself.
Yeah. If there are any Peruvians listening.
What the hell?
James.
Marcus.
You've got a notice.
I do have a notice. The notice is basically, if you want to look really stylish... Right,
and
with
sexy.
A sort of, and sexy, with a Dean Windass Hall of Fame member's face on your chest, right? What you can do is go to our website, click on the banner that says Cult Zeros, and you can order yourself a T-shirt featuring members of the Dean Windass Hall of Fame. So, yeah, go over to thefootballramble.com and do that!
You can also get a Rambleforce Hall T-shirt on with our faces on.
Imagine that.
Imagine that.
Say goodbye, Pierre.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Lucas.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Jimmy.
Goodbye.
We're all off to have our ears plugged like Ricardo Fuller. Ta-ta. That's unnecessary. Don't ever throw sugar around.
Both!
Why didn't you catch it?
Ring finger, I didn't know what it was.
I didn't know what it was. What do you think it was? Piss.
Well, fucking coffee earlier.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.